The Gist. Renegade Research's recent webinar, The Mechanical Basis Model Brainstem Keys to Understanding ME/CFS, asked if spinal issues in the brainstem held the key to understanding ME/CFS. The brainstem is a very old piece of nervous system real estate that regulates essential processes like wakefulness, sensory processing, pain, sleep, and the autonomic nervous system. It's a piece of complicated architecture that's surprisingly fragile. Dr. Kaufman evocatively described it. Humans, he noted, have a very heavy brain sitting on a little neck, which just happens to be the most mobile joint in the body. The structures through which the cerebral spinal fluid flows are thin enough that even small kinks in them could impair flow. Van Elsiker highlighted the fact that the vagus nerve, a kind of inflammation monitor of the body, empties into the brainstem. A recent Nature study that found a master immune switch there proposed that the finding opened the door to drugs that could treat a variety of immune ailments. Jeff Wood's ME/CFS recovery story following craniocervical instability surgery essentially jump-started interest in the craniocervical atlantoxial joint, supporting the head. He described other spinal issues, such as Chiari malformation, high cerebral spinal fluid pressure, or intracranial hypertension, cervical spinal stenosis, and jugular vein stenosis. The common theme in all of these is damage to the connective tissues that results in trapped or even deformed nerves in the neck and spine, damage to the brainstem, and impaired blood and cerebral spinal fluid flows. People who are hypermobile are more at risk from these problems. Mast cells that break down the connective tissues appear to play a major role. Jeff described a process called collagenolysis, which occurs when the body breaks down the connective tissues in an effort to get at pathogens. Dr. Yellman from the Bateman Horn Center in 2019 brought a much-needed clinical approach to these complex issues. Insights from an Unraveled podcast by Dr. Ruhoy and Kaufman on craniocervical instability, or CCI, were included in the blog as well. Both clinics have seen many of these patients with CCI. Yellman begins by determining whether an over-the-counter inflatable collar or a soft cervical stabilization collar, which raises the head up, reduces symptoms. While this is not a fail-safe test and will miss some things, it's an easy first assessment. Doing traction in an upright position is a more helpful test, and indeed, Dr. Kaufman called traction, whether done at home or in the office, the money test for him. Imaging is next. An upright image is superior if you can get a good image. Dynamic flexion protocols can induce symptoms, but is very helpful. Most neuroradiologists, though, don't know how to properly assess these scans. After that comes invasive traction accompanied by extensive imaging at a specialty clinic to determine if CCI or AAI surgery is warranted. The surgeon will be looking for profoundly positive symptom improvement. All three doctors face a dilemma when to move forward with a major surgery that can produce serious complications, has a long recovery time, and has produced differing degrees of success, including some remarkable increases in functionality. Kaufman described three groups of patients. Patients with some unstableness, who he tries to keep functioning and tighten up their ligaments using mast cell immune therapies and physical therapy. More severe patients who are not able to work, who may be heading for surgery, and the profoundly disabled, mostly bedbound group, for which nothing has worked, who he believes are probably headed for surgery. Yellman has his patients pace effectively, attacks MCAS, or mast cell activation syndrome, works on dysautonomia and orthostatic intolerance, tries to calm the sympathetic nervous system, reduces sensory stimulation, and improves metabolic deficiencies. He only goes after CCI/AAI when his more severe patients hit a wall and just can't improve. At that point, he tries things like physical therapy, at-home traction, as well as drugs to treat things like intracranial hypertension. He said in many cases, conservative treatments are enough, and cited the case of a formerly bedbound patient who, after regularly doing traction and physical therapy, was able to return to a full-time job. Sometimes tethered cord surgery, which releases the cord at the base of the spine, thus relieving tension at the top of the spine, can help significantly with CCI/AAI issues. Yellman, Ruhoy, and Kaufman appeared to agree that CCI/AAI surgery is not a complete cure. This is not generally a get the surgery done and walk away healthy for the rest of your life kind of treatment. While some remarkable improvements have been made, if the patient has more than CCI, as many patients do, the mast cell problems, the POTS, the autoimmune issues, etc., will still need to be addressed. If the patient gets hit by another infection, or they have problems below the surgery, or get another hit, the post-exertional malaise, the dysautonomia, the mast cell problems can come back. Venous congestion or outflow syndromes that impair the blood flows in the veins and cerebral spinal fluid flows may also be contributing to these problems. With venous blood flow problems showing up in the abdomen, pelvis, legs, and cranial area, one wonders if they play a major role in these diseases. Caroline Christian, in her Frozen in Amber blog, told her story of tethered cord syndrome surgery. After she was diagnosed with a neurogenic bladder, she had two questions: surgery or a progressive decline in functioning. The invasive traction test, which lifted her skull off her brainstem, produced some remarkable results. She wrote, "I felt incredible joy having a clear brain and boundless energy. Even my vision improved, and I felt better than I had in 15 years. A reminder that I am still inside this broken body. I was euphoric, and I felt a deep sense of equanimity, trusting that everything would be okay." Her tethered cord syndrome surgery improved her physical functioning dramatically, from 20 to 50%, and she went from being bedbound to being able to walk 20 to 60 minutes, 3 to 4 times weekly. On the downside, her bladder dysfunction continues to decline, her cognition is still low, and her stress intolerance is still very high. Julie Remeyer, who has had CCI surgery, which appeared at first to go really well, but who is not doing well at present, spoke to the complexities that can be present. In some cases, the problems go way beyond the anatomical issues found with CCI, AAI, and tethered cord. For complex patients like her, there is no clear path.